S-R-N.
Didn't you ever hear of women's lib?
What do you mean, women's lib? You're a young girl. You should be at home now. You should be dressed up. You should be going out with boys. You should be going to school. You know, that kind of stuff.
God, are you square?
Hey, I'm not square. You're the one that's square. You're full of shit, man.
We're sending you back to the future.
What was his name? The departed.
Flash Gordon.
You mean Dumbo.
Nothing's free in Waterworld.
On an hour, he could have total recall.
And this is England.
The 300 Spartans.
He has a corpse bride.
Why do they call you Dirty Harry?
The Bible calls this day Armageddon.
Watching out for the bad boys.
Welcome to Con Air.
Welcome to The Rock.
You have 13 hours in which to solve the labyrinth.
General, I propose we go forward with your monsters versus aliens idea thingy.
Please consider this my 2 weeks' notice.
You two characters are going to Top Gun.
You are now listening to the first Bungie's
World. Welcome to episode 61 of Cinema Crespo Diso. I am your host, Christopher Crespo. Here as always, just hanging out in the brand new Crespo Diso Studio 2.0. It's pretty sweet. We're out in even more international waters. These waters got more international.
How is that possible?
It's possible.
I don't get it.
That's
how are, if there are already international waters, what are we adding more countries to the list?
That's for maritime lawyers to worry about. Not us, dude. We're good to go. That's the voice of Juicy Cogburn. Drew, how's it
going? It's going.
We're back for another episode 61.
Yes, we are.
Man, you know, it's just waiting for that Wall Street studio to be good to go. To go
it
live,
always
going to
be a while, you know that.
Yeah, a little while. It's going to be a little while before it's ready to go
I
live.
I think it's going to be a little more than a little while.
What? How long do you think? You want to take a bet?
I'm going like maybe 60 days.
60 days until the studio's ready to go live, meaning 60 days until we'll be able to have the ability to go live. 60
Correct.
Days. I'm going to say 60. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good number. Actually, kind of. I'm going to be optimistic and call it 45.
All right.
So, a month and a half. That didn't happen. But optimism. Optimism. And you know what? You know what optimism gets you?
What?
Optimism gets you...
Nothing. A whole lot of disappointment.
We can get you that.
Yep.
Thanks for bringing us down, dude. Appreciate
yeah, dude.
It. Thanks for... That's how we're starting the show. Welcome
hey,
to
man,
episode 61.
If you want to be brought down even more...
Yeah?
You should check out Dr. Drew's 2 cents on nothingness.
There you go. There you go.
That'll bring you down.
That will. That'll end your day quick. All right, so... Good plug right there, right at the top of the show. Nice work. Let's get the Oscar thing out of the way because at this point it's a week later. See, that's why we got to go live.
So terrible.
Because when we go live, the Oscars on a Sunday. We'll do our show on Monday. It's the next day. It's fresh. People are still talking about it. You know, a week later with the current media cycle,
nobody cares.
No one cares. But we got to clean up some stuff. So let's get the show started with some Oscar recap. So if you listen to the Oscar picks bonus episode, I hope you did. We went through all our selections, 24 of them. Yeah. Gave Drew a handicap of -4, +4. You got +4.
Yeah, didn't help.
It didn't help because, how many did you get right, Drew, out of 24?
Not very many.
And then I got 21 out of 24, which sounds like, you know, it's awesome, 21, like, wow, big deal. But it's really not a big deal, and I'll tell you why. Because it just means it was like a very predictable Oscars. And funnily enough, blah, blah, blah. The one thing, one of the ones I did get wrong was documentary, Act of Killing. I thought it would have been Act of Killing. And when that didn't get it, that was a surprise. That was the only surprise of the night. But everything else was just as predicted.
Yeah.
You know, it was, which didn't make for much excitement, I gotta say.
Oh, well. Yeah. I mean, the show is decent.
Oh, the show itself was all right. We watched most of it.
Yeah.
Fast forward through some of it. Skipped over other parts.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, who cares about the singing and stuff, you know? I mean, like, Karen O's cool and all, you know, and the song from Her.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, we got stuff to do here. You know, all right, Mr. McConaughey.
Yeah.
How do you want? Let's recap them real quick. I guess just the big six. Actresses. Let's do the actresses.
Actress in a supporting role was Lupita Nyong'o for 12 Years a Slave.
12 Years a Slave, which is they were saying that since October.
Yeah. She was really good.
She is great in it. She's great. And then her acceptance speech was beautiful, or so I heard and read, because we skipped over that. One of those tearful ones. And then who did what was best actress was?
Actress in a leading role was Cate Blanchett in Blue Jasmine.
And that was another one where that movie came out last summer, and people were saying, oh, she's going to win this thing. They've been saying that since back then. Mm-hmm. So nothing changed. Nothing swayed that needle. Even the whole Woody Allen, like, that bringing up of the controversy again of him, like, you know, the accusations of molesting his daughter. Like, did you hear about any of that?
What, his daughter / wife thing?
No, not that one. No, not a... That's Sunyi. Sunyi is not his daughter. Sunyi is the daughter from Mia Farrow's previous marriage.
Okay.
So he was just like a stepdad.
Okay.
But not really. He wasn't. He never raised her.
Yeah. It was
very awkward. Very, really weird situation. No, but this is like his 7-year-old daughter.
Okay.
Who, like his daughter. And there's some crazy allegations there and shit. And then it came back up a few months ago. Right around when all the Critics' Award things happened, because he was nominated for some stuff. People really liked the movie. Cate Blanchett, she was winning a bunch of shit. So it came back up again, and people think, "Oh, is that gonna affect her chances?" But it didn't.
No,
because it's art, and giving awards for art is a weird thing.
Yes.
So that was that one. And what about the men?
Best actor in a supporting role was Jared Leto, Dallas Buyers Club.
Right.
And then the leading was Matthew McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club.
And that was because of the, when it started with the Golden Globes. They both won for that. And that was kind of a surprise when they both won. And then they just won like a lot of critic awards after that. The only one McConaughey didn't win was the British, the BAFTA awards, which went to the British man.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Exactly. Yeah. So everyone saw that one coming from a mile away. The McConaughey sounds.
Oh, yeah.
The McConaughey day. All right. And then you went up there and said,
All right.
That's pretty cool. That was nice. That was awesome. McConaughey is a fun guy.
Yeah, he is.
What about so gone to that after party?
Oh, that would have been great.
Him and Woody Harrelson, probably.
Oh, yeah. Being all true detective-y.
And I hope not, actually. That'd be creepy.
McConaughey just starts doing as many drugs as he can get his hands on.
Yeah, that'd be terrible. No, actually, no. I don't want to hang out. I don't want to be at that party. Never mind. Wrong party. And then for the second year in a row, the Academy did the split between picture and director.
Yeah.
And so it's just, what were both of them?
Correct. Yes. The best picture was 12 Years a Slave, and best director was Alfonso Cuarón for Gravity.
Alfonso Cuarón being the first Hispanic or Latin, however you want to call it, Spanish individual to win best director. Which is funny because Babel won best picture 1 year, but it didn't win best director.
Uh-huh.
This year, Gravity didn't win best picture, but it won best director. Director. So it's the first time a Hispanic director won. And then 12 Years a Slave winning best picture, first time a film by a black director won best picture.
Oh, there you go.
So far, no black director picture winners, best picture director winners.
Yeah.
You know, tearing down the racism brick by brick, man. It takes a while. It takes all these years. You know, it's crazy. It's ridiculous how long it takes. But it's pretty cool. I like both those choices. Even if they were flipped, I'd be like, okay, cool, whatever.
Yeah.
If they went like Steve McQueen, best director, and Gravity, best picture.
That would have worked.
I'd be like, all right, whatever. Nah. That would have, you know, screwed up my ballot numbers a little bit. But it would have been a surprise.
Yeah.
It would have been something like, whoa, that's something to talk about. But unfortunately, there are no surprises in this one. Ellen DeGeneres brought out pizza. The most surprised person was apparently that pizza delivery guy.
Yeah, he was like, he looked kind of freaked out.
He was also the owner of the place, and he was just helping out. And he thought he was delivering pizza to, like, the writers.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Ellen DeGeneres is there, and she's just like, follow my lead. And he's out, and then all of a sudden, he's like, Brad Pitt's jumping up and, like, grabbing
pizza
plates and passing out plates and napkins and stuff. Yeah.
And Martin Scorsese almost drops a piece of pizza right on his belly.
Yeah, that was awesome. And Harrison Ford totally jumped up, and he got dug into a slice of Supreme.
Well, he was probably baked out of his skull.
Yeah, he probably was. He likes to party that way, that crazy one-earring, the Han Solo bastard. And then you know what was interesting? That selfie moment?
Yeah, it was weird.
It was kind of weird, right? That was all prepaid. by Samsung.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for using that phone, whatever the phone it was in particular. It actually, Ellen did three, like, separate bits with the phone.
Okay.
Like, at one point, she, like, took a picture, like, right on stage, and, like, kind of like how Franco did last year. But he was doing it, like, because he's being, like, Rebel James Franco. Like, I'm going to live tweet my experience as Oscar host, you know? Or was that a couple years ago?
Or was he just baked out of his skull?
People always say that, you know, maybe it's possible, you know, most likely, maybe not. You know, who knows? You know. But anyway, so she takes out the phone, giant white phone, takes a couple pictures at one point. And then she, makes another joke about it, and she has, like, the phone. It's very prominent and kind of clumsy how she has the phone in there. And then they do the whole selfie thing. And I think it was planned for her to do some sort of selfie bit, but it's not like all the actors knew, or, like, Bradley Cooper, and I don't think they all knew what was going on. That was kind of a spontaneous moment.
They just
kind of
got into it.
Yeah, they just got into it, but Samsung totally paid to have their phone used, like, throughout the integrated.
Yeah.
That's what they would call it, integrated
into the Oscars.
Into the broadcast. And, and it's crazy. And, you know, what's really funny, if you look at that picture, do you remember that picture?
Yep.
It's like, Meryl Streep and Jared Leto, Bradley Cooper is the one holding it, you know.
Kevin Spacey is in the background making a funny face.
Yeah. And then there's a crazy black dude with, like, 1991 Arrested Development, you know, crazy haircut stuff. And it's Lupita Nyong'o's brother.
Nice.
Yeah. Total just random dude.
Yeah.
Totally. And he's right in her front. He's got prime real estate in this picture. Like, he's lit the best of everyone. He looks and he's popping out.
Well, he was there. He was in the area. He got in the shot.
I got two trains of thought on this one. First off, kind of ruined what could have been, like, a really cool picture with a lot of, you know, pop culture wise. Kind of ruined it because he's not now you got to explain it's some dude's brother or someone's brother, right? Other side, good for him. That's awesome.
Exactly.
You know,
he's got a picture with all those people.
Yeah, I would have done the same deal. I'll pop my head out, like, photo bombed it. You know, but right there in the front, like, holy shit! And then it's like I'll be walking around with it in my wallet. Here's me and Bradley Cooper. Yeah, we're all buddies. Yeah,
you know. And Meryl Streep. Kevin Spacey.
And then I saw another picture from a different angle. Those whole group of people, they got into the aisle and they took that photo. Liza Minnelli. Was there. She was all the way in the back, and she was. Reach, you know, and she couldn't get over.
Too tiny.
Too small. No. She got left out of the picture.
Oh, well.
Oh, Liza Minnelli.
Poor Liza.
She used to be a big deal.
Used to be.
And now she's in the back of the group.
And her mom used to be a big deal, too, but she's dead.
All right, so... just wanted to let that one settle in there, make sure everyone knew what we were talking about. The Oscars, there you go. So, Drew, we had our little bet. I guess we'll talk about the bet in the second half of the show. We'll bring that up later. So, that was the Oscar recap.
Oh, I mean...
A week later.
I did want to mention that one dude did get the EGOT.
That Barry Lopez
dude.
He
did the whole thing.
39-year-old EGOT winner. Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony. Good for him.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Only the 12th one ever.
It's crazy.
That is really cool. For Frozen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool.
And Spike Jones won for Best Original Screenplay for Her.
Which was awesome.
Which I thought was great.
We both picked that, didn't we? Because we wanted that one.
I wanted her to win something.
Yeah, exactly. We knew it wasn't winning Best Picture.
No.
Wasn't nominated for no acting, nothing.
Nope.
You know. But screenplay, good. Great for Spike Jones. That's awesome. Oscars.
Oscars.
So we go. We'll do it all again a year from now.
Hooray!
And
I always want
to. Let's do the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. Let's go ahead and get that thing warmed up here. Careful now. Careful! And
I know it's hot, dude.
Here we go. All right, so Drew pulls out the Netflix pick of the week out of the randomizer 9000.1 because now we added a little heating element to it. All I did was, a little bit of radioactivity.
I like the picks to be slightly warm.
That's how you know. Yeah, they're hot picks. These are hot picks, people.
They're fresh hot. Well, they're frozen hot picks, but whatever.
Yeah, they've been defrosted because some of them have been sitting around for a while since the 50s.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Day of the Dead.
Oh, the Day of the Dead.
And it's not rated.
Oh, really? I guess some sort of director's cut?
I don't know. It just says NR, 1985, 1 hour, 40 minutes.
Day of the Dead, shot somewhere that you know a little bit about, Drew?
Yeah, set. Yeah, that opening scene was shot in Main Street, Sarasota, Florida.
Sarasota, Florida. Yeah, it's pretty cool. The rest of the movie is all, like, I think on sets and stuff, because it takes place underground in bunkers and shit anyway. Yeah, yeah, it takes place. The movie is set in, like, Florida, which is pretty cool. The Day of the Dead, the third in the original trilogy of George Romero's Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead trilogy. And they came back into Land of the Dead, and then which was pretty good. But then he did Diary of the Dead, which was no good.
No.
And then something like Survival of the Dead or something.
No.
Not very good. But Day of the Dead is cool. It's a good movie. It has, now it's not, you know, the best movie. Like, the acting, it's a very cheap movie. The acting is very stiff and kind of hamish, you know. But that's also kind of the charm of it.
But they talk about some interesting things in this movie.
There's some heavy stuff that comes up.
About,
between,
like, zombies and, like, what exactly they are.
That's what the whole, like, with Bub, the zombie, and him, like, regaining his memories and stuff. That was the first movie or, like, show or anything to introduce that idea of a zombie trying to come back to, like, the human side and recognizing things from the human life, you know, from the living life or whatever. No. And also, the movie is loaded with amazing, amazing effects. Like, just the goriest, grossest, awesomest looking practical effects. No, not a digital thing, nowhere to be seen. It's worth seeing for that alone. When one dude dies, there's one part where a guy dies. A bunch of zombies are grabbing at him. And they do this the awesome thing where some of them grab his body and they pull one way. And other ones grab his head and they pull his head off of his body.
Yeah.
And his neck stretches and he's screaming. Like, he's screaming out loud, obviously in pain as they're pulling his head. And then as his vocal cords get pulled tighter and tighter, the pitch of his scream goes up.
Oh, nice.
It goes like, like that until his
and
head
pop.
Gets, and then again, it's totally ripped off. It's a very interesting little detail.
Sweet.
It's little details like that that make a movie like this worth watching. There's a whole thing how they, like, they're rounding up the zombies where they have to corral them to give to Dr. I think his name is Dr. Frankenstein, so he can, like, do
his stuff.
Yeah, his stuff, his experiments and stuff. Yeah, it's fun. It's good.
Yeah, it's weird.
So they did. Coolio. Good job. Good job, Randomizer. Good job, Drew. All right, so let's get into the box office review. Why don't you start with that one all the way down there?
All the way down there? Which one?
Number 17.
Oh, okay. Well, number 17, the Grand Budapest Hotel had a weekend gross of $800,000. Same as total. Budget of something.
I don't have the budget. It's probably very low budget. Wes Anderson movies don't cost that much money to make, you know?
I see it. Where's it playing?
It's only playing in 4 theaters. I was actually lamenting this on the Twitters with J-High87 at shoutouts at J-High87. 4 theaters is playing New York and L.A. I assume 2 of each. So, you know, the fact that it's only playing 4 theaters almost made $1 million.
That's good for them.
That's a bunch of sold-out showings all day long for Wes Anderson's latest, which is getting great reviews. People are loving it. So in a week or two, we'll finally get our shot.
It's Ralph Fiennes, man.
The finest of Ralph Fiennes. And
The finest of Fiennes.
And the rest of the cast is just ridiculous, though. I mean, does Bill Murray pop up in any problem?
I'm sure he always does.
We got Adrian Brody, Willem Dafoe, Jeff Goldblum, Jude Law, yes, Bill Murray, Ed Norton's back, which is awesome. The latest addition to the Wes Anderson stable. I love it. That Jason Schwartzman's back, of course.
Obviously.
Tilda Swinton, Tom Wilkinson, Owen Wilson, of course.
Yep.
Harvey Keitel, awesome.
Oh, yeah, he's part of the stable too now, it looks like.
He is now, yeah.
Wes just kind of wrangled him in.
It's pretty great. So hopefully soon we'll get to see this, and hopefully it's going to be great. Thinking of it, I haven't, honestly, there isn't really a Wes Anderson movie I don't like. There are levels that I like them.
Well, yes, yeah, you're like, correct. I do like them all.
Yeah. You know, like, I'm not going to rush to watch the Darjeeling Limited again anytime soon.
No, but it was worth watching.
Yeah. I do have most of them on, like, the Criterion DVD, what have you, with special features and stuff that I don't watch.
Do you have the newest one? Do you have Moonrise Kingdom?
I do not. I don't have Moonrise Kingdom, and I don't have Fantastic Mr. Fox. And those are actually two of my favorites of his. It's those two, and then Royal Tenenbaums and Rushmore. And then Life Aquatic. And then further down, Darjeeling Limited. Bottle Rocket's a little higher up there somewhere. Because Bottle Rocket's good. It's,
yeah.
Bottle Rocket's more pure.
But Bottle Rocket, yeah, it's...
It's a young Wes Anderson.
Exactly.
Thing,
he hadn't...
Idealistic.
He hadn't found that style yet that he had.
He saw it's like the camera moves and the music and stuff, but it's not so intricately put together.
Yeah.
And he just worked with what he had.
Yeah, yeah. And now, I mean, especially with everything else, that I mean, man...
Now he has
He's got
resources.
A lot of money to put behind it.
Yeah, now he does
know,
that.
So there's,
relatively speaking, compared to...
There's a visual style and like a... what am I looking for? A production design. All of his movies, like the costuming especially, they're all kind of the same.
You can see yeah. how it's all from the same person.
Exactly.
Even that American Express commercial he did where it was like, you know, and even that was like... somehow homaging another movie, homaging, ripping off whatever you want to, you know. He's a great artist, so he's ripping it off. But that's how it works. So we'll see it.
Yes,
as soon as we can.
Correct.
But that wasn't this week, though.
Nope.
So what happened in the top five? Because that was all the way down number what?
17.
God damn! All right.
So number five was Cineguide.
Right.
We can gross $10 million. Total gross of 41.5.
60% drop from week to week. That's pretty average. So it's not like word of mouth or anything is keeping this one around. Problem is, I think everyone who would have seen this in theaters that would have seen it
saw it.
Yeah, they saw it on TV already. So what's really the point of going to see it again?
Yep.
Other than making some sort of point, some sort of statement.
I don't know.
People,
sounds stupid.
People aren't going to do that. They'll go see a movie if they're interested in seeing it. They'll go see a Jesus movie. It's directed by Mel Gibson.
Yes.
Because that sounds batshit crazy.
And it is. Dude, it's freaking torture and murder.
People responded to it.
Yeah.
But the TV version of the Jesus story with white sexy Jesus. He's Portuguese sexy Jesus.
Yes.
Still pretty white. White looking. Just... throw it up on the big screen, from TV to the big screen, same thing, you know.
Add a couple of scenes, call it a day.
A bunch of churches and organizations bought a bunch of tickets ahead of time to sell out theaters. They did their part opening weekend. Got to that $26 million opening weekend. $10 million, eh? I wonder what's going to happen with Noah. That's gonna be
I'm going to see it.
That boat.
It's not going to make enough money.
You know, remember how there was that, we read that one skewed survey about how... Christians wouldn't want to see movies where the central message was replaced with like Hollywood's message or whatever.
Yes.
And it was supposed to be about how Noah's going to be in trouble because it's a $130 million movie.
Uh-huh.
And they're trying to get the Christian audience, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I just heard how someone went to a screening of Son of God.
Cineguide.
And it was one of these ones that's set up by a church, you know, where they buy all the tickets and people, they hand the tickets, everyone just shows up or whatever.
Yeah.
They showed a trailer for Noah, and everyone, they clapped at the end of the trailer. Like, they were like, all right. Like,
nice.
You know, they gave it one of these. They gave it one of these. You're like, all right, Noah. They were happy for it. So we'll see. We'll see if the people really turn out for that, how they respond to Russell Crowe.
As Noah.
As angst-ridden Noah.
Angst-ridden and drunk.
Looking forward to,
drunk. It's going
to
be awesome.
Drunk Noah. All right, let's move on. What else is going on?
Number four this week, The Lego Movie. Weekend gross of $11 million. Total gross of $224.9 on a budget of $60.
Man, still making that money.
Good. 5 weeks on.
Good for them. Then how to see how much it made international. We're talking about another $135 million in nationals. $360 million worldwide. Lego Movie kicking ass. Lego Movie 2 is happening.
Of course it is.
Will it be another Lord Miller joint? I don't know. That remains to be seen.
We'll see about that.
They may hand that off to some other
people.
Cloudy would have a chance to meet thousands of different people, you know. Because it's really the reason the movie is so good is because of those guys.
Yes.
They're pretty great. Huge fans.
And Will Arnett as Batman.
Yes. Yes.
And Bruce Wayne. God, Lego Batman and Lego Bruce Wayne are probably the two best Batman and Bruce Waynes that I've ever seen.
He's like, who's that guy?
Exactly.
He seems cool. Oh, man. Makes me want to see it again.
But it's so great because he's talking to like the other superheroes who already know that Bruce Wayne is Batman. And they're just like,
yeah. Yeah, it's like, why? Drop the pretense. It's like, what? Yeah. Oh, man. So funny. Want to see it again.
Good stuff.
Want to see it again. So if you haven't seen it, a lot of people have seen it already. If you haven't seen it, go see it.
If you haven't seen it, go out and see it right now.
Did I mention my mom fell asleep during it?
I can't believe how?
She's not. She just wasn't into the... What's
the second I saw that it was entire Lego, like everything was Lego, like there wasn't a part of anything that wasn't Lego, I was like, I'm in.
Even the opening Warner Brothers.
Yeah,
Lego,
exactly.
So cute.
So awesome.
Yeah. Right. Let's move on.
All right. Number three this week, Nonstop had a weekend gross of $15.3 million, total gross of $52.1 million on a budget of $50 million.
That's pretty good for a little Liam Neeson, especially in February. It is a PG-13 movie, right?
I want to see the Liam Neeson movie.
The fact that it's PG. Yeah, so at the theater today, we saw an older gentleman who walked up to the window at the box office, and instead of asking for a ticket for Nonstop, he said, one ticket for the Liam Neeson movie.
He just wanted to see the Liam Neeson.
Which I'm pretty sure I wrote that in my review earlier this week on ChrisCrespo.com. Where I'm pretty sure people now are just like, what's the name of the movie? It doesn't matter. It's the Liam Neeson movie. What's it about? Doesn't matter.
It's Liam Neeson movie.
He's Liam Neeson on an airplane? Okay, cool. What's his character's name?
Don't care.
It's Liam. It's Liam. It's Federal Air Marshal Liam. Is who
Liam Neeson.
It also made... Oh, that went a little too far there. It made another $20 million international. I guess that really hasn't opened up in too many screens yet. As far as international theaters go. When it comes to Liam Neeson movies where he's the lead, like Taken made $24 million opening weekend. And it made $145 million total. Taken 2 made $139 million total. So, can Nonstop get that high?
Yeah, probably not.
Nah. Nah, it'll probably be closer to 75, which is more like Wrath of the Titans or The Gray only made $50 million. It's doing better than The Gray, right? Yeah, so, hey, there you go, Liam Neeson making that money.
Ka-ching.
I wonder if they're going to do, could they do Nonstop 2?
The Red Eye.
There already was a movie called Red Eye.
I know, this is Nonstop 2, : The Red Eye.
Oh, okay, I got you. Genius. Moving on.
He's on the plane back to go home from Iceland or wherever they just landed. And something crazy happens and Liam hasn't had any sleep.
It picks up right where he left off.
Yes.
And then he's back to drinking right away.
Mm-hmm.
Was Julianne Moore on the plane with him?
No, she dies somehow.
Sweet. I like it. Let's get it started.
All right, sounds good. I'll call my contacts.
All right, get your contacts on it. In the meantime, what's number two movie?
Now, number two movie this week, Mr. Peabody and Sherman. Weekend gross of $32.5 million, same as total, budget of $145 million.
Man, that's a pretty hefty budget. We'll see how it does in making that back.
Was there
a big international market for Rocky and Bullwinkle and all that
stuff?
I
have no idea.
Right? You know, that's kind of a...
I mean, I was a fan when I was a kid, but that's just because my dad pushed it on me. He bought the entire set on VHS, and I just watched them. It was awesome.
$32.5 million is pretty good. It's pretty good. And, I mean, Lego Movie's only been out for a month or so. I guess everyone's seen a Lego Movie by now if you have kids.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is going to be another one of those. It's another kids movie. So we'll see how long it goes for.
It depends on how good it is. We didn't see it.
No.
Can't tell you.
Nope.
If you've seen Mr. Peabody and Sherman, go ahead and tweet us. Let us know at Crespodiso. Give us your review. Or call in now. We can't call in. That's what we'll do when we're live. Like, hey, have you seen this movie? Call in. Give us a quick review. And then someone call in.
We haven't. We don't care about it.
Yeah, exactly. But other people listening might.
Yeah, they might.
And they might want to hear someone talk about
it. Well, good for them.
So we can cover our ass.
Yeah.
Right?
I like it.
It's all about covering.
Sounds good.
Cover all your asses.
I only have one.
Yeah, but there's multiple asses on the show. I'm an ass, you're an ass. Gotta cover them all.
Okay, I see.
Number one movie. Here we go.
Number one movie this week, 300, Rise of an Empire. Mm-hmm. Weekend gross of $45 million, same as total. Budget of $110 million.
That's a pretty good budget. At first, 300, I think, only cost like $60-70 million to make, something like that.
Okay.
So it's almost cost them double. And I don't think it's going to make as much money.
No. No, no, no. This is not going to have that. It's not the same movie.
You know? It's been 8 years since 300 came out.
Exactly.
8 years.
And a lot of other people have done this slow motion thing since then.
Now, admittedly, it's one of the best versions of said slow motion action fighting, since 300.
Of course.
Because it's from of that lineage.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, it's like, I've seen some stuff like this now on commercials for History Channel shows and stuff.
I mean, dude, some of those fight scenes were going on, I could have sworn I was just playing a video game.
Exactly.
Like, the violence was comical.
It was, and not in a this is awesome way. Some of it was like, yeah, that looked cool.
That was pretty cool.
But overall, it was kind of numbing.
Yeah. I agree.
Right. And I just didn't care. Didn't care about the story.
Well, I kind of did. Well, it was trying to, have this whole side story or this parallel story to what was going on.
Well, yeah, it was like what happened before 300 at the same time as 300 and then right after 300. Yeah, it was like a wraparound pre-side sequel.
You got to see the Hot Girl's titties.
Eva Green.
Yes.
I found it funny that movie opened early with a shot of bared breasts.
Just like out of nowhere.
I was like, okay, that's very gratuitous and uncalled for. And almost positive because it was slow motion. And it was obviously there, like, look at these breasts. This is the way it was framed. So I'm looking at the breasts. I'm observing them. It's in slow motion. And I'm looking at them and like, you know what? I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Not real.
Pretty sure from the slow motion jiggle.
From slow motion jiggle and the way it's like, is it a little bit of scarring? Maybe. I don't think so. I'm just saying it took me out of the moment.
Okay.
It took me out. It's like, what? How good were the Athenians' breast augmentation back then? Were they that
probably
good?
Not that good.
Maybe not.
Probably not.
I mean, for then it was pretty good job. It was, for that time. But hey, who am I to judge? Not I. Not me. So, and then Eva Green, she bears all later for the sake of art, I guess.
Sure.
Threw her an extra $5 million, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
Something like that.
Threw her some cash.
If you liked 300, but you wanted more boats, more water, more choke, hate sex.
And if you wanted to see slow motion lightning in the reflection of a horse's eye.
Yeah.
Which was really freaking weird.
It was, that's like, that's unnecessary. If you want to see all that stuff, 300, Rise of an Empire, there you go.
That's your movie.
That is the movie for you. Now, it's not like it was, some of it was the cheesy lines.
Of course.
Like, seize your glory.
Yes.
You know what?
Seize your glory.
At one point she says, we will deliver submission. Like, we're going to deliver submission?
Yep.
It's going to be delivered.
Yes.
To your doorstep.
Yes.
Submission to your doorstep. Next night, overnight delivery of submission.
Correct.
There's a couple more. And I was like, I want to remember that because it was just so bad. But, what are you going to do? It's a 300 movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like when The Matrix came out.
Yeah.
And the bullet time blew people's minds. And there were like specials on TV about how they had the camera rig, how they invented this shit. It's like, this is how the Wachowskis invented bullet time. 3 years later, by the time the sequel came out, the commercials were using bullet time, and it was in like Wesley Snipes' movie Art of War, a terrible movie. They were doing bullet time stuff. I was like, what the? It's everywhere. What are you guys
Max Payne.
So all they could do was like Max Payne. What has? Yeah, Max Payne. Exactly. It got everywhere. It became everywhere, and it was no longer special. And then the sequels came out. Like, hey, guess what, guys?
It's not so cool anymore. You got better up the ante, bitches.
So 300 Rise of Empire comes around, and all the best moments are whenever they allude to something that happened in the first movie.
Yep, pretty much.
Pretty much. This guy, what was his name? Thermomocles?
Some sort of,
Thermomocles? He was okay. He was an alright lead. He's no Leonidas.
No.
I mean, Leonidas is goddamn King Leonidas. He was... Goddamn, dude! You know he's Leonidas. He's huge. gigantic man,
huge beard.
He was so badass that he could have like a huge pointy beard and his hair in a braid and like pull it off and walk around like skivvies.
Yeah.
People are like, I ain't fucking with that guy.
No way.
He's wearing skivvies and a cape, and he's not flinching about it. So
he's like, I'm gonna whoop your ass.
Yeah, I'm not stepping. He's the king. That guy, he's the king. I'm just a potter. Here we go, making some pots over here in Athens. That's me. All the things I made. There's no, like, there are a bunch of moments throughout 300 that were cool and iconic images. You know, like which were pulled straight from Frank Miller's graphic novel, by the way. And even this, I think, was based on, like, Frank Miller did something. I think. I have no idea. Like, the shot of the Persians being knocked off the side of the cliff. You know, they're, like, falling off that way. The silhouette of them. And then there's, like, the tree with all the bodies in the tree.
Yeah.
It's, like, all those cool shots like that. There wasn't a single shot or moment like that in this movie that stood out. The closest thing was in the beginning when they're doing that first opening raid and they're running down the hillside and like you do see the lightning in slow motion shit in the background. It's like, all right, that's pretty cool looking. That's the only thing that I really remember. Otherwise, it's all just
lame.
Slow motion swords and goopy looking blood. You said goopy.
Yes, goopy. It looked like
a good way to describe it was goopy, like, digital
and
blood.
They were like pillows of blood.
I mean, in the first one, the blood looked like a certain. It looked like the red blood in the comic book.
Yeah, like the splash.
They went exactly for that monotone red splash over and over. So stylistically, that digital blood worked. Here, it was goopy and it looked. They tried to give it more dimension and then it did the whole
slow motion thing.
And then it disappeared.
Yep. Out of nowhere.
It's not a. The best part of seeing 300 Rise of an Empire was seeing the Godzilla trailer before it.
Oh, that Godzilla trailer is so good.
That was an awesome trailer. It's a great, great trailer. Good stuff. So, Drew. Theaters. Plane. Redbox. HBO. How should people see
this movie? I mean, it all depends on what you're into. I mean, if this is the kind of movie that you're into, then by all means, go see it in theaters. I wouldn't. This is a 2D version, so apparently it's available in 3D. I don't think that any of the effects were worth any sort of 3D ability whatsoever.
It seems like it would have been muddled.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know?
So, I don't think you should see it in 3D. If you're going to see it in theaters at all, see it in 2D. If not, you know, catch it on the Redbox, maybe HBO.
There you go. I'd say Redbox. Just Redbox it. Even for people that like wanted to see just the cool stuff, the 300 like stuff.
Yeah.
Wait for Redbox. You know, maybe is Immortals still on Netflix? Just watch the last 10 minutes of Immortals, and you'll get pretty much the same thing.
Yep, pretty much.
Except a little artier, maybe even just a little cooler. Even a little cooler. All right, new movies coming out on DVD. Got a few of them. The Book Thief, which is a movie about it's World War II and a little girl. The Germans are burning books, but she grabs a book, she steals it. She's, you know. Anyway, Inside Llewyn Davis comes out on DVD this week. Coen Brothers totally snubbed for everything at the Oscars, not even nominated for nothing. Bunch of shit, if you ask me, because that's one of the best movies of last year. You saw it, right? You saw Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah.
And did you like it?
Yeah. It was okay.
You just thought it was okay. In the pantheon of Coen Brothers movies, just thought it was eh.
Yeah. Meh.
Homefront. Jason Statham. James Franco.
Ooh, finally.
Written by Sylvester Stallone like 6-7 years
ago. Like I said, finally.
Yeah, but that's definitely a Redbox type movie for sure. It's only a dollar. It's barely worth a dollar and your hour and a half, but still, you know what?
I just want to see Jason Statham beat up.
That's fun. When he beats up Franco, and Franco is all like southern dirtbaggy and stuff. But he can see
Gator Bodine.
But you can see where he changed the script a little bit to try to make him more sympathetic and shit. You know, because he didn't want to just be a villain. You know, it's interesting. And also coming out of the furnace.
Nice.
Yes, that's a good one.
I enjoyed that movie.
A lot of great acting in that
quite
one.
Quite a bit.
That Woody Harrelson has not been more badass ever in a movie than he is in Out of
no.
the Furnace.
No. Like, oh, man. He is scary.
Watch Out of the Furnace and you'll never look at Woody Harrelson the same way.
No, you won't.
Every now when I see him, like, this guy is ready to explode.
Yeah, no, exactly. Dude, he could whoop my ass real quick.
Now he seems keyed up and like.
Like, I just want, man, yeah, I just imagine him just like guzzling whiskey and doing meth and just beating people up in the mountains for fun.
Crazy Southern Jersey hillbilly, redneck, crazy Woody Harrelson. All right, so that's all that's coming out on DVD. A lot of choices, so enjoy all that, people. What's coming out in theaters?
Coming out in theaters this week. Aaron Paul's new movie, Need for Speed.
All right, Need for Speed, directed by the guy who did Act of Valor. Remember that one, the Navy SEALs movie?
If you say so.
Okay. It's a video game movie. I really don't have any hope for it to actually be any good.
No, it's so going to be bad.
So what I am wanting to see are some good actual car stunts. I think that's what this movie is going to be relying heavily on. A lot of physical, real actual car stunts, not CG stuff, you know, so... hopefully they'll deliver on that promise.
We'll see.
And hopefully that'll be entertaining enough to make the movie watchable.
Yeah.
What else is coming out?
Veronica Mars, the movie?
Yeah. Remember there was a big Kickstarter thing like a year or two ago?
I don't remember that. All I remember is it used to be a TV show.
It used to be a TV show, and now it's a movie. Veronica Mars goes back to her hometown and meets up with some old friends, and she's Encyclopedia Brown, but for chicks and on TV. But now in theaters.
Good for them.
Good for V-Mars fans. They call themselves V-Marts.
Awesome.
V-Martians.
Also coming out this week, Bad Words, directed and starring Jason Bateman.
Yeah, that one, we saw that trailer recently.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere. There's no marketing for it, so obviously they have no hope of making any money with that thing. I don't know why.
But they're releasing it.
Maybe that's a limited release. I wonder. It'll be interesting to see if that actually gets a wide release. That looks like a fun movie, though.
It does.
Since he never actually graduated 8th grade, he gets to go to all these spelling bees.
And just whoop up on all these kids.
Good job, dude. Yeah. Good job, Bateman. Then he meets up with some Indian kid, and they become friends, mismatch buddies, go joyriding, playing with guns.
Yep.
Good times had by all.
Sounds awesome.
All right. What else?
There apparently is some Jake Gyllenhaal movie, Enemy.
Oh, you know what that one is? Enemy? That's the guy who did Prisoners?
Uh-huh.
Is that Denis Villeneuve?
Yeah.
That guy...
Denis Villeneuve.
He did Prisoners, and he did that right after Prisoners with Jake Gyllenhaal, and Jake Gyllenhaal plays himself and, like, his own doppelganger, and, like, he tracks himself down or something.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks very weird. So I hope that one gets a wide release because I'm actually interested in seeing that. I like Jake Gyllenhaal when he plays like crazy people.
Yeah, no, he plays good crazy people. He
plays good crazy people.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, cool. That's what's those are your new movies, right? That's it.
Yeah.
All right, very good. We'll see some of those this weekend coming up for show, and hopefully some Grand Budapest Hotel as well. Right.
Oh yeah.
And all right, so let's see. Let's take a break here. We got some stuff to talk about in the second half, but first. Crespo Disco. Got a song here from the... what am I playing? Oh, this is from the Desperado soundtrack.
Oh, nice.
Yes. It's called Mariachi Suite, and it's actually like three songs in one track.
Okay.
Good times. Hope you guys enjoy it. We will be back with the second half in a second, so stay tuned.
Welcome to the Questo Game.
Welcome to the second half, episode 61 of Cinema Crespedisto. Just get the plugs out of the way real quick. ChrisCrespo.com. Go there. Right now. Go. Thanks. Appreciate it. Cinema Crespedisto. Rate us, review us on iTunes. Stitcher. Any other place where you can rate and review shows. Yelp. Can you Yelp us? Put us on Yelp. Review us on Yelp. Right?
Is it possible?
I have no idea. Drew, where can people get you online?
At antihero419 on Instagram and Twitter.
All right. And get the show on Facebook at Cinema Crespediso, on Twitter at Crespediso, and on Instagram at Cinema Crespediso. All righty. Let's get into... Why are we screwing around, right? Let's just get into the show. Drew, tell you what. How about we get the show started?
Okay, Chris, we're an hour into said show.
Only like 40 minutes. Yeah, I think it's a good time to get started.
Okay.
All right, here we go. So we got I got a couple stories here. What do you want to hear about first, Drew? You want to hear about movies in Miami? You want to hear about Noah in the Middle East? Or some other story about... Or do you want to hear about my personal connection to the newest Terry Gilliam movie.
Personal connection to the newest Terry Gilliam movie.
Okay, here we go. Terry Gilliam's latest, The Zero Theorem.
Okay.
Just got distribution. I got a deal, so it's going to be coming out in theaters in August, it looks like. I think it said late summer. And let me see. There's a press release here. Directed by Gilliam, The Zero Theorem stars Christoph Waltz as Quohen Leth, an eccentric and reclusive computer genius plagued with existential angst. Living in isolation in a burnt-out church, Quohen is obsessively working on a mysterious project personally delegated to him by management, aimed at discovering the meaning of life, or the lack thereof, once and for all. Increasingly disturbed by unwanted visits from people he doesn't fully trust, it's only when he experiences the power of love and desire that he's able to understand his own reason for being. The trailer's out there.
Sounds crazy.
It's a crazy trailer. It looks really weird, but of course it's Terry Gilliam, right? It's what you would expect.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for that date. Did it say? It just said come out in theaters late summer, so that's going to be August.
Okay.
But it got a deal, which is great. We'll have a chance to see it. Directed by Terry Gilliam, it is written, well, it is from a screenplay by Pat Rushen.
Okay.
All right. This is Pat Rushen's first produced screenplay. Pat Rushen is a professor over at UCF.
Okay.
And he was one of my teachers for a few of my classes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, as a matter of fact, for the intro to script writing class that I took with him as a teacher, he handed out one page of a screenplay for formatting purposes, so people can see the format, and it was the first page of The Zero Theorem.
Really?
Because I remember it was Cohen Leth, and he's bald and crazy looking, and he's in a burnt out church, and it's interesting.
Weird.
Very, very interesting. So, suffice to say, kind of pulling for this movie.
That'd be awesome.
Kind of wanted to succeed, so it's kind of a full disclosure type thing. From here on out, people should know. Zero Theorem. I wanted to be a good movie. I wanted to do well because this guy was a really nice teacher. He was a nice guy. Learned a lot from him. I took like three different classes from him. One was a screenwriting class, and then two like immediate and an advanced creative writing class. This guy was great. I liked his style. He's a cool dude.
Oh, there you go. And now one of his screenplays got turned into a movie.
A screenplay that he wrote in the 90s.
Yeah, well, there you go, dude.
When I took his class, this was back in like 03, he already had stories of years of production development hell and the different directors who looked at it and different actors who wanted to play the lead and stuff. It went through a lot of different people, man. It was pretty crazy. And now it's finally happening as a Terry Gilliam movie.
Weird.
Which is weird. Yeah, and Gilliam, you know, I love the guy. He's made some really good movies, but it's also hit or miss. You know, and he hasn't really made a really good movie in a while.
Oh, maybe this will be the one that brings him back.
Ah, oh, wouldn't that be
the rebirth?
Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be something? All right, well, we'll see. That's zero with him. So that's my connection to the latest.
Awesome.
There you go. That's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. 6 degrees of Chris Crespo.
Okay.
That's only 3 degrees.
Nice.
2 degrees, 2 steps. All right, other two stories. Do you want to hear about? What do you want to hear about next? Movies in Miami or Noah in the Middle East?
Let's go with movies in Miami. We'll keep it local.
Let's keep it local. A film studio got approved for Miami, Florida. Studio is being made by Screen Gems Entertainment. I'm sure you've seen their name a few times. From some movies. It was passed the Miami Omni Community Redevelopment Agency's Board of Commissioners. Ooh, a lot of words there. They approved a contract with EUE, Screen Gem Studios, for development and operation of a movie studio and related facilities. This is as per this hack website, Variety.com.
Okay.
So, hey.
Some movies in Miami.
We're making more movies in Miami. It's been put on a 14th to 16th month fast-track construction schedule. Screen Gems already owns and operates film and TV facilities in Wilmington, North Carolina, Atlanta, and New York City.
Yeah.
So the fourth place will be Miami, Florida. That just means, you know, more production jobs for TV and movies, you know, for Floridians, for South Florida, which is really cool. And, it's good for them. It's good for the state. Good for everyone involved. There's also that they're just passing now. They're working on passing some new tax initiatives, tax incentives, to film incentives to get more productions out here to the state. A lot of them, if you're going to the southeast, you end up going to Georgia and Atlanta because there's a lot of tax breaks over there. Louisiana, huge tax breaks in Louisiana. So they're losing a lot of productions to those places. So they're trying to find a way to bring film back to Florida. Res is now video. So that's all shown video. So there you go, Miami. Screen Gems. It's a team made in heaven, maybe? No?
All right, so I guess it's not time for Noah in the Middle East.
All right, why would you think, Drew, that Noah would be banned in several countries in the Middle East?
Because the historical story took place there?
Not really. Why would Islamic countries, specifically Islamic governments,
something about God, Christian propaganda of sorts?
Something about God? No, not Christian propaganda. No. Censor boards in Qatar, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates have informed Paramount they will not release the biblical epic, which begins its global rollout later this month. Similar rulings are expected in Egypt, Jordan, and Kuwait. According to insiders, and Egypt is a pretty big deal because that's a big country. Even though there's still a bunch of unrest there, relatively speaking, there's money to be made in Egypt. Yeah, people always see movies. That's the ultimate in escape entertainment, escapism. You know what I mean? In Egypt, the leading Sunni Muslim institute, Al Azhar, issued a statement condemning the movie, saying it should be banned in that country. Al Azhar renews its rejection to the screening of any production. Here we go. Here's your reason. Renews its rejection to the screening of any production that characterizes Allah's prophets and messengers and the companions of Muhammad. Therefore,
Noah was a companion of Muhammad or something?
He is
an Islamic prophet.
He's considered a prophet of Allah. Yes, one of God's prophets. Therefore, Al Azhar announces the prohibition of the upcoming film about the Allah's messenger, Noah. Peace be upon him. That's the official statement.
Nice.
They throw that little peace be upon him at the end. Peace be upon Noah? Mm-hmm. He doesn't really need it. He's cool. Noah's fine. Al Azhar said any such film is contrary to faith and to the fundamentals of the Islamic Sharia law, adding that such movies antagonize the feelings of the faithful. Really? Right. I guess it was. That's what the stories we've been talking about lately, about how our believers and Christians, will they be antagonized by this movie, by this depiction of Noah?
We'll see.
We will see. I saw another report, another article thing, sort of an article, not really news, but Darren Aronofsky talking about how there really is no controversy. He thinks once the movie comes out, people actually see it, then people are like, oh, okay,
it's a movie.
There's nothing blasphemous. It's a movie, but it's nothing to, like, you know, get all up in arms about and shit, you know. All right, so there you go. That's some little movie news there. I got a few questions this week. Got a couple of Crespodome battles.
All right, let's do this.
We haven't had some Crespodome battles in a while. Here's one from J-High87. Amy Adams versus Jennifer Lawrence. Both nominated for Oscars this past week. Both not winners.
Correct. Both losers.
Hate calling them losers because it's for an award. But it is. If you have one winner,
yep,
the rest are losers, right?
Correct.
Sorry, ladies. So Amy Adams versus Jennifer Lawrence. All right. First, as actors, their acting prowesses.
I would say Amy Adams.
Amy Adams is really good.
Yeah.
She's been really good. Like, but Jennifer Lawrence, though, I mean, she's only 23, and she's been pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, but I don't think the quality's been there. She's only been in a couple of quality movies, and they've both been David O. Russell films.
Fair enough. Well,
the rest of them.
Winter's Bone, too, the first movie that, like, really blew her up. Otherwise,
it's didn't see that.
Hunger Games.
So the Hunger Games, you don't count. That's not.
Oh, Drew. Ah. Here we go.
So terrible.
Sorry.
It's okay.
If this is your first time listening to the show, I apologize.
Where did I put that?
Even if you're not, if this isn't your first time, he still apologizes.
No, if this isn't your first time, you know what you're getting into. We got a sparring round. I think I said last week that we would get a guest in here for you this week, but you know what?
We don't.
I think we're going to get a guest in here for you next week.
All right.
And then one the week after that, and so on and so forth until we get into a new studio. But in the meantime,
60 days.
I came up with a game for you. 45. I came up with a game for you. 60 days. And then I thought of a better game. So I put the other one away for later. I'm doing this one now. Hope you're ready. This is a new game. We haven't done it before.
Okay.
It's called the Auteur Theory. Do you know what the Auteur Theory is, Drew?
No.
The Auteur
Theory? No, I do not.
The Auteur Theory comes from the... It stems from French New Wave cinema and those guys. Those film critics turned movie directors. And their idea was that a movie, even though it's made by, you know, upwards of a few hundred people, it takes a lot of people to make a movie, you know, it's still the vision of one person.
Correct.
And the director of a movie is that person. It's his vision. And when that director goes from movie to movie to movie, even if he's working with different people and different topics and stuff, there's still going to be the common thread between all that work. Because it's his vision. It's the same person over and over. And I keep saying he. It could be a lady, too, or, you know what I'm saying. But anyway, that's the Auteur Theory. So this game, in this game, I'm going to give you three movies. You just got to tell me if they were made by the same person or not.
Okay.
Bonus point if you can name the director.
Okay.
So, for example, if I were to give you Jaws, E.T., and Lincoln, yes or no? Are they made by the same guy? Same person? Jaws, E.T., Lincoln.
I don't know if Spielberg made Jaws.
Well, he did, so.
He did? However, there we go.
That's supposed to be the easy example one, just to get, you know, but yes. The answer would be yes, and then if you were Spielberg, then you would get the plus one. Okay, so here we go.
Okay.
Let's see how this goes. I thought I made it easy, but now you just scared me a little bit with the Jaws Spielberg thing. Of course he did Jaws. What's the matter here? Number one, here we go. Scarface, Carlito's Way, Mission Impossible. Were they made by the same person, yes or no?
Yes.
The answer is yes. Very good. Any idea who the director is?
I do know his name, but for some reason it escapes me right
Brian
now.
Brian De Palma.
There we go.
Number two, Do the Right Thing, New Jack City, 25th Hour, yes or no?
I don't know if he did the 25th Hour.
Well, I need an answer.
No.
That is correct. What director are you thinking of? When you said, I don't know if he did it.
I don't want to mess up his name because I always get that. I always get because there's. It's. No, it's okay.
We'll just go on to the next one.
Do the Right Thing and 25th Hour are both directed by Spike Lee.
Yes.
And New Jack City was.
It's this whole Spike Lee, Spike Jones thing. I always get those two mixed up.
Spike
Lee,
Spike Jones.
The two spikes, I get them mixed up.
All right, but you got that one right, though, so there you go. You're two for two. Rocky, The Karate Kid, Lean on Me. Yes or no?
No.
Yes. Rocky, The Karate Kid, and Leading On were all directed by John G. Albertson.
Oh, well, there we go.
The same person. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, if you watch Rocky and then The Karate Kid, a lot of thematic overlaps, the way the story plays out, even like the way the movies are shot.
Okay.
It's kind of creepy, actually, how they're so. The Altair Theory. Number four, directed by the same person or not. Here we go. Number four. Raising Arizona. Fargo. A Serious Man.
Yes, it's the Coen brothers.
That is correct. Hey, and we get the bonus point. Good job, dude. I put plus one there. Okay. Number five. Once Upon a Time in the West. Once Upon a Time in America. Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
No.
That is correct. Good job. Once Upon a Time in West, Once Upon a Time in America, Sergio Leone movies. Once Upon a Time in Mexico, Robert Rodriguez. Number six, The Thing, Escape from New York, Tango and Cash. Directed by the same person, same director, yes or no? The Thing, Escape from New York, Tango and Cash.
No? No.
No is correct. First he asked
John Carpenter.
And then he says correctly, The Thing Escape from New York or John Carpenter. Tango and Cash is just some random.
I'm thinking to myself, Tango and Cash, John Carpenter? No.
Yeah, that didn't fit there. All right, so very good. Good job there. I actually marked that as wrong, but it's right. And you got that one right, too. You're actually doing quite good. You only got one wrong, dude. And that plus one, so that cancels that out. Number seven. Rambo, First Blood, Part 2. Tombstone. Cobra.
No.
Ooh, yes. Yes, answers yes. George P. Cosmatos directed all those movies.
I thought Tombstone didn't fit.
Yeah, it kind of doesn't, but he directed it. It's an awesome movie. Number 8. THX 1138. American Graffiti, Red Tails.
No.
That is
George Lucas.
That's correct. THX 1138, American Graffiti, both George Lucas, but he only produced Red Tails. Just gave it some dude. Number 9, Heavyweights, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up.
Yes.
The answer is no.
He didn't do Heavyweights today.
Judd Apatow produced Heavyweights.
He didn't give me a chance to say who it was for my bonus point.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, the ones that are no, there's no. You gotta.
Yeah, I mean, I knew not. There's only I knew 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up with
Judd Apatow.
Yeah. I didn't think Heavyweights. I didn't know about Heavyweights.
He produced it.
All right.
And finally, number 10, Brick. The Brothers Bloom and Looper.
No.
Yes.
Really?
Those are all Rian Johnson movies.
I knew Brick and Brothers Bloom were. I didn't know Looper was.
As a matter of fact, those are the only three movies he's directed so far.
Oh, man. Two of them with JGH. Interesting.
Yes, and other than that, he's also directed a few episodes of Breaking Bad.
Weird.
That's how awesome he is, Rian Johnson. So you got you got four wrong, but with that bonus point, it's 7 out of 10. Hey, great job, dude. Nicely done. Congratulations.
One bonus point. Dude, I got like 3 bonus points. What are you talking about?
No, I wasn't paying I really wasn't paying attention. Bonus points there. I might have to drop the whole bonus points angle thing, so we'll just get rid of that for now. Amy Adams or Jennifer Lawrence as actresses. You were saying Amy Adams is better. I'm going to go ahead and agree.
I mean,
Jennifer Lawrence has a chance to grow and become better.
Exactly. At this point in time, Amy Adams is the better actress. Now, we'll see how time progresses and see what, you know, Jennifer Lawrence does.
Ends up, yeah.
But, I mean,
she can be the next Meryl Streep. You never know.
In the Hunger Games, that's not acting.
Nah, yeah, it's her big budget comic booky. Yeah.
Exactly. She just looks hot and skin tight doing action.
And then she has to look sad at the right moment. Exactly. You know, believably enough. Yeah. in a fight, in a battle, who would knock the other one the fuck out?
Oh, J-Law.
She would have all to, right? Because she has all the Hunger Games training now.
Yeah, exactly.
Amy Adams, she was like an Enchanted and stuff. And the X-Men stuff. Amy Adams hasn't done any action stuff.
No.
Sorry, Amy. So it's one for one. It's a split. So, hey, that's good enough. All right. At Mr. Nathan, what's up, Nate? Crespodome battle. James Dean versus James Dean. He's talking about James Dean, D-E-E-N. Lindsay Lohan's co-star in The Canyons. And whose other credits include movies such as Ass Blasters 47, Big Giant Booty Daddies, or, you know, I don't know. It's a porn star, dude. His name is James Dean. He calls himself James Dean. He was put in a movie.
Okay.
All right. You got it now, Drew?
Yeah.
You're looking pretty confused. I was trying to get it there for you. You got it. Yeah, I was talking about James Dean. And then you got the original James Dean, you know.
All right, so I go with the original both ways, because if you're going with a porn star versus an actual actor.
Yeah. An older actor, too, an actor from the 50s, so I imagine he's still a tougher guy.
Yeah.
As opposed to actors today who are more like, get me a latte.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
So James Dean, the actor, over James Dean, the porn star?
Correct.
Both ways?
Yes.
In acting and fighting?
Yes. I mean, if there was a fucking category, obviously the porn star would win, but...
Oh, shit. You just happened. I forgot to mention. Wait, no. Is it? Oh, you know what? It's not plugged in. I unplugged the soundboard. I was going to do like boing or something. There's a fucking category. Who wins in a fucking category? James Dean, the porn star, James Dean, the actor.
Probably the porn star.
Most likely. He's got the practice.
Well, that's his job.
A lot of that's what he does. Frankly, that's what he does. So, we're going to give him that one. At least we'll give him that one then, right? Be nice enough to do that? Yes, no, maybe so. All right, thanks for the feedback, Drew. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah.
I appreciate the banter, the one-on-one, the really helping making the show go around. I got a couple questions on the Facebook. You can always ask us questions on Facebook, so here
Book
we go.
Book of Faces.
On the Book of Faces. This one's from Caleb Twombly. Caleb has, this is kind of a long one. What about reviewing the foreign film? Trying to expand the listener's variety. Y Tu Mamá Lo También might be good because it was directed by Alfonso Cuarón, who just won Best Director for Gravity. It's instantly on Netflix. Or the French film La Haine is amazing. It's streaming on Hulu. Or even the Shane Meadows film This Is England, if you want an international director film, but still the English language, also streaming on Netflix. So, we talk about foreign movies when we can, when we see them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe we should make more of an effort to watch foreign films at home.
We do.
At the studio. We do our best.
And we've seen a bunch of foreign films.
Yeah, we're all about the foreign movies.
I mean...
Now, the thing is, you got to remember the listenership. I do try to be the film critic of the people.
Yeah.
Trying to bridge that gap between what people perceive as the snooty masses and what the film critics perceive as the unwashed... No, the snooty critics and the unwashed masses. You know, that's the divide I'm trying. I'm trying to be the unwashed critic, the divide that brings the two together.
Yes.
Right? Gotta remember, you know what I hear a lot when people want to, like, do you want a recommendation on the Netflix? Hey, recommend something on Netflix. No subtitles.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know what, buddy? That takes away half your options, man.
Yeah, it does.
There's a lot of great movies on there. Past Netflix picks of the week. Four foreign films have included Headhunters.
Yes.
And Clown, which I saw them both at last year's Florida Film Festival. They're both on there. They're both great. They both have subtitles. Get over it, people. That's what I want to say. You know, some people are there's like, I don't want to read.
There's a lot of crazy Asian films on Netflix that people can just watch all willy-nilly with no warning whatsoever.
Previous past pick of the week, Old Boy. Never to be a pick of the week because I can't put this on people. I can't burden them with this. But when it's like, Get You the Killer.
Oh, good. Yeah, no, it will never be a pick of the week. But man, if you want some sick, twisted, really ultraviolet and perverted stuff, I mean, it's there for you.
Even then, I think it's only the R-rated version.
Oh, okay, so it doesn't even go but half still, as far as what I've seen.
But it gets there, though. It doesn't need to, but it gets... Not really a fan of that movie. Like he mentions La Haine, which is on Hulu. I didn't know it's on Hulu. I don't have a Hulu thing going on. But if you have Hulu, definitely check out La Haine. It's a black and white French movie from the late 90s. You know why it's on Hulu? Because it's a Criterion movie. That's right. They have that awesome Criterion selection.
Oh, Flamin' Citron. That was a great...
Flamin' Citron is awesome. Flamin' Citron's great. La Haine has Vincent Cassel. Who was recently in Black Swan.
Yes.
Right? And it's all about like the life and the day of a couple of youths in poor-ass Parisian ghetto neighborhoods and shit. And one of them gets a gun. And what happens when, like... It's kind of like the French black-and-white version of Juice.
Okay. What happens when somebody gets a gun?
Someone gets a gun. What happens when someone gets a gun in the hood? Now they have the power. Now I have the power. But it's all in subtitles, you know. But yeah, it's good stuff, though. Yeah. Obviously, Tu Mama Tambien and Alfonso Cuarón. I mean, pretty much anything the guy does is awesome.
Yeah.
It's all... Just go to the Netflix pick of the week. Just go to chriscrespo.com and type in foreign... You'll get a whole list of things that people can check out. Definitely recommend people expand their horizons as much as possible. But you got to remember, Caleb, man, just some people don't want to be hearing that shit.
Huh?
Some people
don't like reading while they watch movies.
Some people don't want to read. Listen, I like oranges, but I don't want no pulp in my juice. If I want to eat an orange, I'll eat the orange. If I want to drink it, I'll drink it. I don't want no pulp.
All right. I feel you.
So if I want to watch my movies...
Without reading no subtitles.
Without having to read. You want me to read? I don't read The Hunger Games. I don't even know subtitles, too. Something like that. I'm trying to reach out to those people. Right?
Correct.
So you got to give them foreign movies like The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover.
Oh, yeah, because they'll love that.
It's still... there's no subtitles. They might want to turn the subtitles on because all the funny talk with the English funny talk. Love that English funny talk. But foreign films. We love foreign films here. Cinema Crespediso, named after a foreign film. We're named after a 1989 Academy Award winner for Best Foreign Film.
Cinema Paradiso.
Thank you very much. Also on Facebook, on Facebook, Tony Barrett. Subliminal messages in theaters. Old Wives Tale?
No,
they're not. It's been proven that they've done stuff like that.
Yeah. In the past, definitely.
They've been tests, right, where you flash an image of a Coke sign or something, and then a few minutes later, people just start getting up, and they get thirsty.
They're just like, you know what, I'm kind of thirsty. Oh, man, I kind of want some salty popcorn.
Right. Like, why? Like, why am I all of a sudden?
Yeah.
Movies are totally, they're full of subliminal stuff, either where it's for marketing and advertising, or whether it's the filmmaker is sneaking stuff in there to program you. Make no mistake, you're being programmed.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That's why they call it programming.
Even in that key today, I was getting programmed regularly.
Yeah, they were like blasting us with sound waves and like, wee doo, like wah wah. Then they're just putting out codes like red, blue, two to the fourth floor. Like, what? Space only has three levels. They're like, it's over. We're Skynet will become self aware, and then then there's nothing that we can do about it. Subliminal messages. Fight Club has little messages, sort of. Alright, let's close this one out with our question from Billy D. Email from Billy D.
Alright.
Our New York City official show correspondent. He writes, "Hello friends, I'm really looking forward to As the Palaces Burn, and in general enjoyed a bunch of docs recently. Any good docs I should be on the lookout for? Docs?" Peace out, Billy D. Documentaries. Any good documentaries to be on the app for? You know what? There's an Errol Morris documentary. I'm a huge Errol Morris fan. Speaking of Netflix, The Thin Blue Line is on there. That was a past pick of the week, I believe. Great, great movie. He does a lot of awesome... Tabloid was also a recent pick, right? He did that as well. He's got one coming out, or it's been out, played some festivals, and should be available soon, called The Known Unknowns? Or The Unknown Knowns or something like that. And it's pretty much him sitting down with Donald Rumsfeld and talking to Rumsfeld, interviewing him one-on-one about his time in the Bush administration and all the decisions behind the different things with Iraq War and stuff. He did a similar thing with Robert McNamara. McNamara?
Really?
Yeah, he did one with that dude called The Fog of War, where he talked to him about all the shit he was involved with in the 50s and 60s and 70s and so on. We did a similar thing with Rumsfeld. Definitely want to keep an eye out for that one. I'm sure Billy's seen The Act of Killing. Right?
Everyone. I hope so.
Yeah, he better.
If not, then he needs to watch The Act of Killing right now.
Yeah. I'm sure he's seen it, though. Have you seen any documentaries recently, Drew, that you can think of other than agriculture, maybe?
No, not really. I mean, all the documentaries I watch are, you know, stuff on, like, the History Channel or Nat Geo or, when does Cosmos start?
Oh, Cosmos, that's starting on TV pretty soon, ain't it?
I hope so. I want to see Neil deGrasse Tyson presents.
Yeah. I've seen him popping up in, like, other places, like, promoting the hell out of that. Good for him. Good for Neil deGrasse Tyson. Cosmos, that's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, documentaries on, I don't know, Blackfish? I haven't seen Blackfish yet. Have you seen Blackfish yet, Drew?
No, I really don't care to.
Drew doesn't even care to correspond with the Blackfish. So, yeah, I don't know. Documentaries, you tell us, Billy. You watch some documentaries and tell us. How about that?
Well, I mean, hell, if you just watched a bunch of docs, why don't you tell us which ones you watched so we can watch them?
Yeah, Doc, tell us about the docs.
Doc?
What's up, Doc? Can we rock?
Of course.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. We're all done here. Thank you very much, Drew. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, sir.
All right. Thank you for listening. Hey, you want to join a fantasy baseball league? Hit me up on... send us an email at cinemacrespiso@gmail.com. Or hit me up on Twitter at @IamChrisCrespo. And enjoy the show. Hope you enjoyed this one. We'll be back in a few days with the Dr. Drew's 2 cents.
It's about food.
It's going to be about food. That's going to be a fun one. Looking forward to that. And then episode 62 with, we're going to have a guest. I'm hoping to have a certain guest.
A certain special somebody?
Certain special someone. One who, he's already been on the show. He's our most, he's the guest that's been on the most.
I don't know who that is.
Probably because we've had the most fun. It's the most.
And it's always a good time.
It's always a great time having this guy on. So, oh, there you go. You already know that it's a dude. So, here we go. End of the show. Thank you guys for listening. We are out of here. Stretching out. Great. I don't think anyone's listening at this point anyway, so.
So you just start talking about random BS?
Yeah, when I said we're out of here, people shut it off.
Awesome.
So this is the part of the show where I talk about stuff that I don't want people to hear me talk about.
Okay, so like what? What kind of stuff do you not want people to know you talk about?
I don't know. I need you to leave the room first. Leave me alone. So I can...
Oh, man. Okay. All right, dude. I'm out. Peace.
Hey, where you go? I'm coming with you. Can I beatbox a side and up? Yeah. Crespo needs soap. It's the cinema of the Crespo needs soap. It's the cinema. I'm Chris Crespo. What?
What?
And we're out.
Huh? Okay.